From groundbreaking innovations to industry-shaking updates, this is your Construction Technology News of the Week. Join us with our guest of the week as we dig into the latest news shaping the future of construction.
We have to talk about some of the interesting, cool public policy that's happening. And there's been a push now, and this has tried to happen a few times, where, you know, presidents have tried to push for innovation in the construction process, which, by the way, goes far longer. Nathan, you said this earlier on, there's permitting and there's code enforcement, that which we've talked about and things. So this came out that, you know, President Trump's unleashing permitting technology for the 21st century. So basically, there's been a mandate put out that we need to improve the permitting process and the environmental outlook and the environmental quality consulting of everything. And so the push is to do this all with a better plan, a better process. And I think that's what's interesting here, that I'm hearing in it and how it's measured, is that it's measured more on the time and less on, hey, if you use BIM or if you use X, which we have seen in other, we saw that in the infrastructure bill. We've seen it in some earlier bills where, hey, here's $30 million, $50 million. Tell us how you're going to use a technology to improve something. And it's like, well, that's not the right KPI.
All right, crew, it's back. The next evolution of Bluebeam's legendary user conference, XCOM, is here. It's called Unbound, and it's coming to DC this fall, September 30th to October 2nd. You know the vibe. Expert insights from industry leaders, cutting-edge construction tech, Bluebeam training and certification, and unparalleled networking with your global peers. Unbound takes that legacy to the next level with new AI-powered workflows, global AEC connections. But don't worry, they kept the free Bluebeam certifications. Keynotes from my hero, Duncan Wardle, former head of innovation and creativity at Disney, and Apple's legendary co-founder, Steve Wozniak. Use our exclusive code, UnboundTheCrew, for a discount. And join us as Bluebeam evolves and leads the digital construction movement. Register now at unbound.bluebeam.com, and we'll see you there. Use code UNBOUNDTHECREW.
KPI is like, does it actually work, and can it actually help the permitting process? And I think this one's huge reaching. Like, this is the first time we're seeing it focused on the outcome, not necessarily on the tech itself. And I mean, I know pre-call, a few of us were jumping in. What are your thoughts on it?
I like the fact that they have it oriented towards the results. I think that that is a huge shift, because usually, like, even you bring in technology with bad process, you just do the wrong thing faster. So like, this really encourages you to get your act in order. And I think there is the need for funding to do that in that space. You know, it's a very well-established space in permitting. It's gotten very, you know, normalized. We're already starting to see it a little, though. Like, Jeff, your friend at Union Map added permitting to his maps. All right. I was working with a company named Shovels to get an API for permitting to add some other things that I was building. So like, some of the base level, like, technological infrastructure is starting to build. So giving it a kick of money, I think, is awesome. I think with the environmental side, it's all going to be, how much do you trust the system? Like, right now, you want it changed because you don't trust the existing systems going as fast as it could. And do you trust the new system or not? So I think for that, focusing on the results is, again, the right answer. Is, okay, we're talking about helping you get rid of duplicate entry. That's not going to hurt the thing. It's just going to help the efficiency within the mechanism. So I do think he did it because he was a developer, and that is one of the most painful parts of development. He probably got in there and said, just get rid of it. We just want to get rid of it. We just need no, like, make it faster.
I'll challenge, because then I'm going to throw it over to Jacob here, but I'll challenge, because the one thing we do need is, and I think the government does this very poorly in the process in general, is that we look at fraud and we build into the beginning of the process so much to prevent fraud, when actually the percentages of fraud are lower than they should be, than they are believed to be. And we should actually focus on catching it at the far end, processing it when it's made it there, and making that upfront process faster and more efficient with less duplicate entry, a better process. This is also about multidisciplinary teams inside the federal government working together on a systems level, and then actually attacking fraud. And like you said, Jonathan, when it comes to the environment, any set of flags that you can turn that level up high and say, okay, we don't have to look at all of these fairly mundane use cases when you're talking about certain farmlands, et cetera, expanding those kinds of things. But hey, we're looking at mining in places. We're looking at drilling in new places. Hey, by the way, we have a whole new process for that that can be more stringent because we have more time, right? It's what we've always said. Stop working in the business and start working on the business. Stop working in the paperwork and start working on the environmental impact of anything we're going to do. So that's like one of the things I'm with you. Like I'm 50-50. I'm not exactly sure I love it yet, but I mean, we keep trying. Jacob?
So to me, and it's funny because we had the conversation before the show, and as I thought on this, I've kind of like flipped here, but first intention. Like what's the intent of this being pushed through? And the intent of this being pushed through is to get a lot of things done quicker. His things done quicker, I'm assuming. But hopefully it's for the good. And then we all been through permitting. It is so tough and so hard. The other problem for me though is what is the increased risk of this? So I like the outcome, but I think it's still a risk to measure time as your KPI because people will cut corners then to meet that. And the last thing we want to do is have them, well, you only have 8 hours to review this mechanical set versus the 24 hours you had before. Well, that doesn't make anything more efficient, right? Like now you're just shortening the actual time of review and it's making it a problem. Are things going to be missed more, or are people going to turn to technology to say, hey, we need, you know, technology to help review these things before we even get in there, identify issues before we actually start with our eyes? I know there's still plenty of permitting offices out there that do paper-based permitting. You still have to print 8 different sets, send them to them, and they review. What's going to happen there? Because the day that you tell the guy down in Miami, Florida, who's been doing it for 50 years on a piece of paper that he's now got to do it in Bluebeam. Oh, I mean, Jeff's got a great opportunity here.
Yeah. Hey, listen, it's got to be done somehow. But I mean, I remember James Benham doing it back in the day with BIM during a council meeting, trying to get some things approved for a building he was working on or a group he was working with to build a building. And it sped it all up just to get consensus from a local zoning committee or something. So but you're right. It could be used for good, it could be used for bad. And all in all, it requires change. And well, we've proven we're really great at that, huh?
Here in Charlotte, back in 2015, I was on a team. We permitted through BIM with the Charlotte Mecklenburg Permit Office. It was a VA clinic that was a public-private partnership. And it was incredible. They literally had us update the models daily. And if the contractor wasn't built what they were seeing, they would say, hey, you know, we need to talk about it. It was an incredible process. It was amazing. But the forced adoption across the country like this is really, really tough.
Yeah. The hope is that it's not a forced adoption, that it's actually a proofed process that, you know, can be replicated and at least start to improve, you know. But we can see. Anybody else thoughts on that or other parts of government policy that maybe we haven't really looked at?
I don't know. I don't want to be the naysayer here, but the more I read through this article, I mean, I know they say technology like in the title of it, but what it sounds like is slashing the permitting and environmental requirements to allow for expediting of energy and infrastructure projects. And so, yeah, if you are pro infrastructure and anti-environment, then this is a great thing for you. And many, many of us are. But if you happen to be pro-environment, you probably are very scared by this because I think there are a lot of environmental impact reports and things that do really slow down these projects. And that's essentially what he's saying without saying. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to slash that stuff. And so what are the unintended consequences of not doing those environmental impact reports? I mean, America is the great experiment, right? Like, I guess we'll find out.
I would rather us not do the environmental impact reports. I would rather we get to them faster and we allow more time for them and more review of them, and that they're more of the focus of the process and less of, Jacob, that person going through all that paperwork that you just handed them, and actually focusing on what will this do to the local environment and how can we make sure that we've dotted I's and crossed T's. Now, we do know where it came from. So every group has its own leaning with them. You can't get away from with them no matter how you feel. Anybody else got thoughts, Jonathan or Travis?
I was going to tack on to Nathan. Like I, you know, and we've talked before about how my mind works with government. I don't like anything from a federal level that just applies across the board. It's the unintended consequences that are always in that type of stuff. Like, I would have probably, I think Jacob, you're and then Jeff, you reiterated this is like start with a test case in a region. Let's work it all out before we just wave our wand and say this is how it is. That's always the unintended consequences when you're doing something for close, you know, for a country as big as ours with close to 400 million people. There's just so much in there that you don't know that's what's going to happen. On the surface, yes, if it speeds up the building process, on the surface, I could be for that. It's just kind of what all happens in that process that we're not thinking about.
I think it's a lot about where do you think the process is today? And is the process effective? If the process was effective, would we be going after this still? Or is it just, like you said, is it just, hey, we don't like that you're saying no to environmental protection in these areas and we are going to make something that is a mechanism to get at it? I'm probably pretty close to Nathan's view on it. And I think they kind of said, we're going to cut down all the time with permitting. And then they said, how are you going to do that and still be safe? And they said, technology. And then left it at that, right? Like, that's a great way to like, I'm going to cut my time. I'm just going to call it technology. It's great. Maybe we can call it AI. I'm surprised you didn't say AI will allow us to make it better.
Yeah, AI was not mentioned once in the whole article. That's amazing.
I think there's a couple other things that's interesting too, is we're seeing some of the changes in maybe our renewable taxes and the renewable energy space right now, even though we're seeing such a huge push on the grid. I've seen a couple of things get started to be scrapped.
I think that that's a huge impact. A lot of the projects that are being scrapped that were environmental, you know, in nature, especially in alternative energy, those have been in planning for years. There are workforces being developed. There's a bunch of materials being, you know, consigned to that. It shouldn't be something that can be switched off that fast. I mean, I think that the fact that you try to switch off that much work that fast is pretty dangerous from a society standpoint. I just think it's a bad move. But you're definitely seeing it. Like, I remember I was working on Brooklyn Biodiesel for a while. And right while I'm working on it, I'm literally going to New York and we're like taking scans and we're remodeling stuff to get the biodiesel plant up and running. Biodiesel took a tank on its value. And they're like, well, we'll just stop that project. And I'm like, we've been working on this project for 2 years. Okay. And we got all the, like, we're ready to go. And you're like, no, temporarily down in the market. We're just going to drop. It does sort of smack of really, 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 really short-term thinking.
That is a huge one too, especially given that, you know, you're trying to bring all those things back and our grid's already taxed. And we're not saying get rid of maybe some of the current methodology, but like you said, if we don't start working now and developing those products and perfecting those products and making them efficient and understanding, right, some of them won't work. There's this idea, a lot of stuff's not going to work. We got to find ones that do. By the way, we also have to find ones that do safely, right? It's not like we've ever invented anything that, went the wrong way when we started using it. So I agree with you. And that is an effect right now of the current economic climate and the current government policy climate that I think is really short-sighted and needs to be focused on. And I would hope, going back to our associations, Nathan and et cetera, that they might think about in the process saying, like, listen, we've got to keep focusing on this. And some of those renewables for a lot of the industry are profitable. They're getting efficiencies out of them. They're really growing in the way that they're doing it. So I think it's an opportunity that we might be losing there. So, well, we've nailed it on that. And now I want to kind of draw us into the financial world. I know we don't dive into there very often, but there are a number of things and financial indicators that we're seeing that kind of look ahead. And gosh, do we have a lot of uncertainty, right? Again, financial markets are uncertain. However, if you're watching construction tech, we're starting to see people get back in the game, starting to see funding rounds come back up. Not sure if I love that in some respects, but I do see a lot of that. I also see, I mean, if you've been watching, the mergers and acquisitions market is pretty hefty right now and pretty crazy. So I'm wondering what, you know, sort of the pulse of maybe other people are looking at right now that on the financial world.
I mean, I think it's interesting the whole scale of it. I mean, I threw one of the links in there to, I know Autodesk, I hadn't heard of this company, Pier PTC, mainly because they're not directly in construction. They're more of a manufacturing, PLM, product lifecycle management solution. But I mean, we talk about big numbers of what was like 170 something or 160 billion million that the Plan Grids and the Building Connectors were going for. This PTC is a possible $25 billion deal that Autodesk could be acquired. I mean, just the scale of Autodesk, and like we complain to them of like, why don't you care about us? But frankly, like we are such a small section of how big they are. I feel like we almost have to realize sometimes like how big of a company they are relative to a Procore, relative to some of like what we would appear to be their equal competitors. And it's, yeah, like, again, we don't often think about what drives their decisions and how their world works. Because at the end of the day, yeah, money drives everything. So, yeah, I think it's just an interesting context in all of this. And just to show that, yeah, there is still some crazy money getting thrown around.
We forget that in construction, especially when we talk about Autodesk a lot. You forget that we are a very small portion of the business that they do. Anybody who's been to AU has had that kind of reality check when you get there and you're looking around going, wait, where are we again? And they're like, what are you with construction? So you're going to need to get on the tram and go that way. No, I'm kidding, Autodesk. I'm kidding. They've done well and have, you know, different sections on their floor, but you do start to realize just the enormity of that company. And to look at a $25 billion acquisition, wow. I was looking through that, but then again, that shows, you know, the mergers and acquisitions I was talking about. I'm interested, Travis, what are you thinking?
Well, there's a couple of thoughts that come up. It is kind of something that we have, you know, a half a billion dollar a year revenue mechanical contractor, and we think we're large. And then you realize you got to put 25 of those in the room to start to sway an Autodesk to be like, you know, we're important. And even 25 of those type of contractors in the room is really, they're like, yeah, okay. Game of Thrones, mic drop, right? but I was thinking of the mergers and acquisitions. We've talked about this in some text threads that we have, that we're starting to see within construction companies themselves. We're starting to see more private equity, more venture capital start to make our way in there, which is interesting to me. Alice the Young, we've talked about this before, where, you know, people are still looking for their black swan moments, right? In traditional investing, that those are fewer and fewer. You're not going to have a lot more Procores at the IPO on that. So you're starting to see that money creep in. You're starting to see, we've talked through construction in years that, you know, once you kind of get around third, fourth generation of a construction company, those family-owned businesses, they don't want to continue. And what I've seen in there that is disturbing to me is they're starting to treat it like they would treat just about any other acquisition they make in private equity. They kind of let the business run as it would for the first 1 to 3 years, and then they start to really slowly silo them off. They pull back their, you know, interactions with other contractors. They pull back their activities in industry events. They pull back their, you know, some of this stuff is in process, so it's yet to be seen what the end goal is. But I mean, we all kind of know what the private equity mindset typically is, right? Like you're gonna hollow out the business, stuff it with debt, and then poof, right? And I'm hoping that we're not going to see a lot of that in construction. We do love the giant contractors, right? Those guys do some really cool work. They're really fun to work with. But there's a lot of that mom and pop to mid-sized contractors. And I would actually, now that I think about it, I think that the middle could end up more hollowed out. I think that the smaller guys are still going to be okay, and the giant guys are going to be fine. But kind of that middle is kind of, I don't know where it's going to go. And I don't really know if I have too great of thoughts on it, but it's just something that I'm starting to observe.
I mean, I think the middle is going to be interesting when you talk about that private equity, when you talk about acquisitions. We're seeing it, right? We saw EMCOR just acquire Miller this year and Miller Electric. And we're seeing more and more of those acquisitions. I think, wasn't Cupertino involved in one recently too? And I excuse me if I'm wrong on that one, but there's been a couple in that world where we're seeing acquisitions and sort of creating these larger companies, and eventually we'll have large and small, and the middle will be lost. And there's a ton of innovation in the middle. It's really hard as a five person, you know, this or that, or a small local GC to innovate and take risk. If the middle gets to take the risk, right? Because you have a little bit less people impact. You have a little bit more control over it, in my opinion. So I'm interested too, because mergers and acquisitions is not something for just ConTech. We're seeing it consistently. And I think on the Dorks, we've talked about it, John, that, you know, it's the reality right now.
I think it's the reality, especially for people that have ARR associated with service. If you can prove that you have annual recurring income, that's what's attracting private equity. The construction as a whole, like commercial construction, when you look at our margins, you know, everybody come in that actually sees our bottom line, and private equity is going to look at your bottom line, is going to go, why are you even still doing this? You know, like it's not sexy. And certainly if you're going to try to basically pull money from the bottom to the top, which is what typically happens, there's not a lot to pull from. But if you have ARR and want to develop ARR, I think that's why they're going after it. I'm so negative on the subject that I like feel like I should just almost stop myself so I don't rant. I do think that, you know, on the positive side, there are a lot of people looking to get out, and they have a way to get out now. I do notice that I have yet to run into a firm that fundamentally did better after they were acquired. Like one that's, oh my gosh, we got the acquisition and now everything's just wonderful and beautiful. So I might live in a bubble where everybody else is having a wonderful, beautiful time. But for me, it was like the owners got paid off and half of us got laid off. And at the end of the day, I get the argument that things are about money, but like there's communities and people and a kind of planet that we are living on that we have to live with each other. And if everybody's unemployable and unemployed and getting laid off all the time, it's not a positive. I actually personally, and I'll stop my rant after this, can't see a lot of difference between this and trusts back in the Industrial Revolution. So like the idea that antitrust doesn't apply to this is disturbing to me, because it's going to do the same thing. And you're right, it's going to wash out the middle. The beginning or the small companies only survive if we don't legislate them out of existence, which you can do. And I would say that's on the software side too. We have software that used to cater to small businesses. It now caters to PEs, and the PEs know it, and you can see them pulling the levers on the features. This is a feature that's only going to work for big companies. This is a feature that's only going to work for big companies. This is a feature that's going to actually cut out small companies. And I don't know how intentional it is and how much it's just, if you're going to support a big company, it's tough to support a small one at the same time.
Hold on. We want that. And I'll go to Nathan here. But to that point, Jonathan, like it's a dollars investment thing. You know, you don't see a ton of them, I think, that talk about it when it works. They talk about it when it doesn't work, right? That's part of it. But I'm interested, Nathan, what was your counterpoint?
I'm not going to argue the PE side of things, because we've had that debate and I'm with you on that. But EMCOR, for example, is a publicly traded company. And there are a few others that AECOM and Jacobs, again, more on the engineering design and program side, but more and more large construction companies go public. How does that change how they're now held accountable for financial reporting? You know, what is their overall health of their projects? How does that change their requirements of what they need to report? Like there's questions that I think if you talk to economists, like they don't know the answer, because financials don't track to that level of granularity. But again, that's another thread, I think, with relationships that, you know, CPC is building with a Construction Financial Management Association, CFMA, and other groups to try and pull on that thread of the money. Because again, I've always been operations, efficiency, people first, who cares about the money? But the longer you know, have to fend for yourself out there, you realize that the mighty dollar does, you know, hold true. And it is that thread that we have to pull. And so the more we can tie this stuff to where is it impacting the bottom dollar, and create systems like publicly traded companies that have to use that XBRL financial reporting standard, you know, can we actually funnel that into a good thing? So yes, there are a lot of bad things to consolidation and large companies and the little man, but there are some potential good signs.
This is what I was thinking about, Jonathan, and I lost my train of thought there for you, but you were talking about whether it's venture, whether it's PE, whether it's M&A, and then influencing what they're designing, things that were designed for smaller companies that are then focused on the larger companies. That is a problem with the way we look at total addressable market and the way that people buy software in this industry as a whole. We have it wrong. We have it fully wrong. They always go after the big ones because they see a total addressable market. They just take a number. Hey, you're a $5 billion whatever. We want to go after you because that means if we got our share at even 0.1%, you know, we're getting this out of it. What you don't realize is, you know, those companies don't, it doesn't work out that way. And in fact, the small dollars add up over time with those smaller contractors, medium contractors that are actually growing, and you grow with them and you can make that money off of them. And that, man, I have sat through that room. I have sat with people looking at that, and it is next to impossible to get money people because they go out and do charts and graphs and they look at it and you go, it's just, and I think there's also still at this point, a misunderstanding that a $10 billion GC, how many people they have versus a $1 billion mechanical, electrical, anything. The impact that the software can have on efficiency is so much higher when it comes to take it all the way down to small trades. They just have more people. When software can impact people, and what are we talking about? People, people, people. The GC's numbers are just bigger, but they're a lot of times they're shell corps, right? Not to say they're a shell corporation, but they're pass-throughs. So yeah, I think the financial model is still one of those things. And I'm in the middle, man. Like, I do think there's certain things in the software side of things that acquisitions are really good for, especially because you see them, right? Wrong time. Maybe not fully baked, didn't really get it, but have some IP that would be really powerful. Those are some of the acquisitions that, yeah, it's not great, but they look good later. I mean, I think, I hate to say it, but like an Unearth for Procore, like that was a company that was really struggling to just get over the hump, and going in there and taking some of that IP and then putting inside a platform like Procore was a good move for them.
What we see in this article, it's very much of what is that IP and PTC. It's a very interesting, I don't know, number that they acquire for, because it doesn't even mention AI. So the only time you're seeing these large acquisitions at that price point is with AI right now. And to tell you the truth, when you sent me the article, I was like, thank God Autodesk went and bought something for AI, because they still haven't cracked their nut on what they're doing with AI. And I'm like, all right, great. No, it's product lifecycle management, which they have Inventor for. So it's a very, very odd one for them to go do, but that it's not out of their mold, right? Autodesk has done this before. They've then brought it in, or it died off because it was competition in the market.
We got to wrap this up and get into the future. So what I wanted to do with all of these three themes is create the final theme for folks listening, because we're headed into my favorite season of the year, right? By the time this thing comes out, we will have been at AGCIT, the Innovation and Technology Conference, and then we'll be going into the Fab Conference for MCAA and into the national conferences, into the big AUs, into Groundbreak, and not to be left behind, Unbound for Bluebeam. Use your code, Unbound the Crew. Yeah, that's right. Selfless plug. Before we do that, though, Travis, I know you have a little something to share with people, and we'll make sure this gets out over there. But you and CPC got some work you're doing.
Yeah, we are doing some work. You know, one of the things that people always complain about in the industry at large, but sheet metal contractors in specifically, is who put the damn walls up already, right? And that's just a jab there. But the real issue is what is the proper trade stacking? And if you ask each trade individually, the proper trade stacking is the one where I go in first, because I can do all my work the fastest. And we've partnered with Nathan at the CPC just to start doing some surveys and kind of get down to what is that the right sequence. And then from that, if I'm impacted by the project going out of sequence, what can I say? What can I bring back to the project team to be saying, hey, you know, maybe there's no way to get it in the change order or whatever, but saying, hey, on that last project, you went out of sequence and it changed my efficiency by a coefficient of 3, whatever that formula is. So if you do it again on this next one, I'm going to build it into the contract, you know, whatever that language kind of comes out. So it's a long way of me saying that Nathan has put together a survey. It's on LinkedIn. I'm sure Jeff will share it out with the show notes and everything else, but there is a survey that we sponsor with the CPC, the SMACNA is, to start to get some industry data on what do you think that proper sequencing of the trade is in, and then we'll produce a white paper that we'll share that information out. Nathan, you want to add some more color to that?
Nobody hates taking surveys more than me, which is why we made it super short. It's like 4, maybe 5 questions. But I think, yeah, if you have any experience, BIM field, otherwise, with the struggles of especially in complex interiors projects, of the top track, bottom track, the different components of framing and how that goes in with your overhead and your in-wall MEP. I mean, it's just, there is no right answer, but we want to collect as many different kind of experts of what's not working today, what challenges are you seeing from your perspective, and how would you in a perfect world fix it? And then again, we'll compare and contrast those together and put that into a white paper and, you know, hopefully keep rising the tide for everyone and advancing the industry forward. So thank you, Travis and SMACNA, for coming up with the idea. Shout out to Kurt with Dig and Kolb having that need in the first place, starting kind of poking the eye a little bit. And so, yeah, it started a really good discussion through Chad Pearson and Plexus and Aaron Kahn as well, as through a lot of the wall and ceiling associations, to bring everybody together and realize that, yeah, both sides have their side of the story. And until we collect all sides, we can't really propose a good solution moving forward.
And we'll report out on it. So once that white paper comes out, you'll see a new episode here, because hopefully you've already noticed that the CPC and the contact crew have come together. If you're reading your newsletter, you know that now. And if you don't, well, then sign up for the newsletter, people, thecontactcrew.com. We're wrapping up, so I want each of you to sort of give like your 2-minute, hey, you're headed out, you're going into conference season, you're getting your bag packed, you're getting your mind ready. What should you be focusing on? And Travis, I want to start that back with you after your nice plug here. What are some of the things you try to tell people before they hit a show floor and sort of get overwhelmed?
The thing that I've always learned from or tried away is, like, you know, some people say, like, bring away 3 things. If there's one concept or idea that you can get from wherever you're going that you can come back and actually implement, that's important. Being able to report back to your people. I think that sometimes we lose focus on the fact that, you know, like if you're working for a company and they send you to a conference, right? It's not just for your own personal growth, right? You need to be able to report back to the people. And I will also say, as we're kind of getting into, we've hit it on a couple times, like the age of AI and everything like that, I think that we are starting to also see a trend where I can't remember, I've heard it on so many podcasts and read it in so many articles, where like people are kind of getting dumber from using AI way too much. So when you go into these, I mean, most of us are going to all these tech conferences, really be mindful about what their AI says it's going to do, and where's the human involved? Where's that context? Where's that decision point? Because we really don't have tools that are going to dumb our people down, right? And I think that, and you just don't want to fall into the hype. So really be mindful and do some real research on, you know, okay, it's a chatbot that accesses my project data. That's not terrible. Like, just, you know, be fine with that, what it is. But if it tells you that it'll manage your project for you, be skeptical.
I like that. That's good advice. Nathan, what do you got?
You know, I think I'm going to steal one from Charlie Dunn. So starting with the problem, I think, is such a big thing before you even sign up for the conference in the first place, assuming that you're going and paying and want to get something out of it. If you don't have it looked kind of internally at the organization and listed those 1 to 3 problems, like, here's what we need to solve as an organization, and then go to those booths and then they go to those conversations and they're going to sell you everything, and you go, okay, within the context of this problem I'm trying to solve, how does this, and how do they respond to that, right? I think that it's a way easier to vet all these shiny, you know, bells and whistles that are out there. Because you can get very caught up in it if you just want to go there to be impressed. Like, you're going to be impressed if you want to go to a show to be impressed. But if you have those problems and what you need to solve, it gives you, I think, a much better context for those conversations. And it'll be a lot more productive, and you'll have better notes to bring back to your organization and show the value and you know, be able to come back again.
Post-conference, you know, recap is a really important piece. But the pre-conference find and fact, like, I'm going, what are you guys worried about? What's our biggest problem? That's another great one, especially too, if you're going to do that in the middle, you can connect it. Like, hey, I saw this and I think we should dig in more. Jacob, I'm interested, you know, what do you got for folks this year?
It's actually becoming more real. So you're going to even hear more about it. Once again, it's another buzzword though. There, you can probably replace it with microwave also and see if it really works, but go out there, learn about it. I think I'm going to go on top of Travis and Nathan here for this, but what's it solving? And actually ask, did they go and do the research and figure out what the problem was before trying to solve it? So there's a lot of solutions out there that they think they know problems and they think they created a solution for it. Did they intentionally go do something, or did they just ask AI if we could solve a problem with this?
That's a sweet wrap right there. Jonathan, what do you got, buddy?
Oh, I'm super systematic on this one. And if you've seen me at conference, I'm super systematic about it. First, Nathan's definitely right. Jacob's definitely right. Know the problem statement of your company. There's a ton of them, but know them well. But I would say this, you're going there to find like digital workforce. You're adding to your digital workforce. So go there with a list of jobs that you're trying to fill. These are jobs that already exist in my company that are being done by a person or being done poorly by technology that I'm going to fill. I want to deliver drawings to my job site. All right. That's the job that I need to be done. Can you do that job? And when you talk to the software providers, it's very specific. And I would actually say, talk about it as if you were going to hire a person, write a resume. You know, you're going to do a Trimble. You want a Trimble? Well, do you want to work at 8 hours a day? Because if you do, you're going to take two batteries. That's going to cost you more money. So like understanding what are the jobs that need done in your business, writing up a resume. Absolutely, you should do that before you walk in there. But the thing that I don't say in the class, and now I've sort of started to double down on it, is you want to pick a couple things to experiment with also. We can solve problems by sitting down and planning how we're going to solve that problem. And we can solve problems very systematically from the, you know, looking at the problem at the end and working back through the means. But sometimes you get to the answer by experimentation. And so going in there and being passionate about a technology you want to experiment with, I'll give you money for that if I'm your owner, because you will take that and you will experiment and you will have those problems in your head and you will start to solve them for me. And I don't think it should be your core focus, but if on one side of the barbell is jobs to be done, on the other side is experiments that I want to do.
I absolutely love it. And you guys did a wonderful opportunity, because that's what I always say to people when you go in, is there's a duality of getting there, right? You got to pack your bag with your problems. You got to know what those problems are. You got to have the highest and have them ranked so that when you're hitting that showroom floor, right, you're going and looking for specific things. And I tell people, go into it and set your mindset when you're going onto the showroom floor for, hey, these are the problems I've packed. These are the problems from my other people. These are my standard operating procedures and the way I do things, and focus and go in and really search out those things that are looking as though they may be able to help you with it, and have those deep conversations. Like you said, Jonathan, I love the fact that, you know, you give everybody a job description and it's a digital workforce. Like we're hiring them not to replace that person. We're hiring them to do a job that it can do better, so they can go do other things for us. We said we have a deficit. We're not trying to replace you. We're trying to amplify you. And that is a great, you know, really good way to go about it and prepare. And then I think you leave and you do your favorite kind of reset thing, whether that's an amuse-bouche and you eat something or you have a cocktail, and you open up your mind to what's out there from an R&D perspective that I should really look for. And that's where you walk in looking for trends, and there's always 10 new of them, right? They have right now .ai at the end and they solve all your problems. But there's a truth to looking at that and to just knowing that future and really being ready to absorb it. So you get both. And then to me, guys, I say this all the time, go through the program. pick some of the hot ones, but pick some of the boring ones, please. I hate to call them boring because they're not. And I know John teaches a lot of them, but it's like, this is how you do your process map. This is how you look at your construction technology stack. This is how you do this. Because by the way, we don't sign up to do those things, and he doesn't sign up, and a lot of the other people don't sign up to do those things. You know, at ours, Troy DeGroot is going to be out there teaching a lot of the essentials. Like, they don't do that to hear themselves speak. They do that because they really care about making a difference and teaching and changing. So make sure you get that nugget out of every one of them, and go to one of some of the more, I hate to call them boring because they're not, the real tactical. So that's my thoughts. Guys, this is so much fun. We don't do it enough. We're going to have to split this up into two episodes. Travis, thanks for joining us today, man. I know you got to get rolling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great talking to all you guys.
Nathan Wood, thank you, buddy, for sitting down and enjoying us, man, and enjoying the time with us. I love the contrarian in you. It's just getting stoked more. I like it. But I do like the rounded out beard, I'm going
to
be on.
Yeah, it's fun. The mustache had its time, but it's back to business.
See you in Movember with that one, and you'll have a better excuse. Jacob Dalbora, my digital twin, thanks for joining us today, my friend.
Absolutely. And RIP Hulk Hogan, legend. Good thing I'm not going to just rip my shirt off here for everybody on the podcast, but I appreciate the time, Jeff.
And probably the only one who can do that flex better, Jonathan Marsh. Man, I just really enjoy the way you break these things down. It's always fun to have you in this little news. I know you don't give yourself enough credit, but in my world, I learn a lot from you, man, and I appreciate it.
I love being on here, and hopefully private equity doesn't key my car, so we're good.
Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for the construction technology news of the quarter, the year, whatever you want to call it, with the crew. To read all our news stories, to learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.